It's just like,
it's just not as fun. So
this is Solidarity Journal. Share in a common voice. Just might find your own.
To think that this was John Doe.
It's like the argument about the argument in
part. It's Tuesday, November 22nd. You are listening to Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. On today's show, I'll look at last week's nationwide crackdowns on the Occupy movement, where police brutality was used while evicting protesters from their encampments. This was done with force, batons, pepper spray, and other means of violence. Also, we'll look at what political officials are doing to create this attack on the First Amendment, and how the movement is reacting to these attacks. So stay tuned to Solidarity Journal on the front lines of radio resistance. To Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. At the beginning of last week, the Occupy movement was getting near the two-month mark from when it was first started on September 17th. But also, last week brought one of the most brutal weeks during the movement, with the mass crackdowns on the Occupy movement nationwide, including Occupy Wall Street at Zuccotti Park. The first of these crackdowns started at Occupy Denver, which has been evicted from their encampments twice since its building. The second eviction came late Monday night, when police, looking like RoboCop, came in and dispersed the Occupy encampment. The police faced one woman asking for them to respect the peaceful protest, only to be ignored as they walked past her through the encampment and demolishing everything.
There are so many of you at a peaceful, non-violent protest!
Two to one!
Letting loose fire extinguishers to put out the cooking equipment, and even kicking over the tables that had donated food. Although they lost their occupation, the protesters were not ready to back down. A few days later, Occupy Denver took to the streets and were met again by police. The situation got a little more heated after hundreds of Occupy protesters continued on the streets, blocking one of the intersections, after having just encircled the Federal Reserve Denver branch. Thousands of people from all walks of life flooded back onto the park in front of the Colorado State Capitol building, where they started chanting, "This is a peaceful assembly, no weapons allowed." One man with his face covered with a bandana started speaking through a megaphone at the police.
The U.S. government is in violation of international law. The U.S. government is in violation of all its international treaty obligations. The U.S. government violates the Geneva Conventions. They violate the UN Charter on Human Rights. They violate the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. They violate the Indian Treaties. Who brings weapons to a peaceful assembly? You protect and serve the ruined class.
That evening, halfway across the country, Oakland police moved into an encampment by anti-Wall Street protesters in Oakland, California, arresting 33 people, clearing out occupants and taking down about 100 tents. Chief Howard had this to say after a shooting near the Occupy encampment, which left one person dead. Quote, "We had to take action. I tried to do it the next day, following the shooting, but I didn't have the resources ready. I was going to go all in." What becomes obvious is that this was the 109th murder in Oakland this year, and never did the police react in any way to those murders like this one. It was what the city was looking for. They took advantage of the situation and used someone's death to call for an action on the Occupy movement. Navy veteran Shake Anderson was interviewed on the scene of the fatal shooting, in which he describes perfectly how the city and media was reacting to the killing.
There's about 100 murders a year in Oakland. What makes the murder that happened tonight here in Occupy Oakland different?
Well, because it happened in the doorstep of a worldwide revolution. It happened on the doorstep of a revolution that is affecting everyone. So therefore, this occupation throughout the world is bringing light to everyday issues. And that's an everyday issue. Luckily, this happens in a neighborhood with nothing but black people. That same thing happens in neighborhoods with nothing but black people, and the news don't even report it. So because it happened here, it's being reported. That's why I'm talking to you. But guess what? If it was my cousin that got into a fight with some dude and he felt like he was getting jumped and he called his cousins and they killed me, I wouldn't be on the news. I'd be dead. And no one would give a about my name. No one would be going to the hospital checking on my status. Nobody would even be talking to me about my dead-ass cousin. So in one sense, it's tragic, but in another sense, we're still doing our job. We're still bringing light to social issues that happen every day. Every day this happens.
This exploitive aspect of this murder to justify the takeout of Occupy Oakland's encampment was further demonstrated by Mayor Jean Kwan of Oakland when she made a comment to the BBC that she was part of a conference call with 18 other cities across the nation on how to manage the Occupy movement.
I was recently on a conference call of 18 cities across the country who had the same situation where we had started as a political movement and a political encampment ended up being an encampment that was no longer in control of the people who
there were two
it.
Conference calls that were to be a national call to bust up Occupy. Police in New York consulted with other police departments in the country to see how they conducted their evictions in their own cities and towns. In Portland, Oregon, Mayor Sam Adams said that these two phone calls were hosted to, quote, share information about the occupying encampments around the country. He described the calls as check-ins to share information and advice on how various cities were handling the demonstrations. And as police came down on Occupy Portland, Mayor Adams said, "I have said from the beginning that I believe the Occupy movement would have to evolve in order to realize its full potential." In response to the beatings and macing of the Occupy Portland protesters, a few individuals made a statement towards the mayor and the violent attacks by police, which left Justin James Bridge in a hospital and now in a wheelchair.
"Our trust in City Hall was apparently misplaced. Thousands of Portland residents of all ages came out over the weekend to support us and help defend our constitutional right to peaceful assembly. They were greeted by hundreds of militarized riot police armed with tasers, stun batons, beanbag weapons, tear gas, pepper spray, and live ammunition. This was shocking to many of us who did not expect you to respond to unarmed, peaceful, and joyful protest with potentially deadly force. The next day, we observed police officers clubbing our fellow citizens and friends with batons, throwing people to the ground, and making many unnecessary arrests in the process of destroying our encampment. An example of this blatant police brutality is the violent attack on Justin James Bridges, the sign language interpreter for Occupy Portland. After repeatedly communicating to Portland police officers that he had a broken back, police officers responded by beating him and putting a knee into his back. He was hospitalized and lost feeling and control of movement in one arm and one leg due to the unreasonable and excessive physical aggression inflicted by these police officers. Justin was released from the hospital yesterday after spending the night in the hospital. Justin is now in a wheelchair. You told us on the first day of our protest that you were sympathetic to the goals of our movement and wanted to help find a solution that works for everybody. The behavior over the weekend of police officers under your command has clearly indicated otherwise. Yours is the latest in a string of aggressive, dangerous crackdowns by city and state governments across the nation, attempting to silence the Occupy movement. You claim to support us, and yet you tell your police force to destroy us. Peaceful citizens are being injured in the process. This is not democratic. This is autocratic. Portland expects more from its city government. Signing on to ending corporate personhood and changing campaign finance laws amounts to a conveniently timed attempt to restore your declining reputation among members of the progressive left. While we agree with these goals, offering piecemeal crumbs of liberal reform is not acceptable as an olive branch to our movement. We have said from day one that our fight is not with you, but rather with banks, irresponsible corporations, and a corrupt federal government. By camping outside of City Hall, we gave you a choice to decide to stand with us and with working class Americans. Instead, you made the choice to protect unjust social and economic policies that are leading our nation into the state of financial ruin and institutionalized oppression. The actions of the Portland police have made it clear where you stand, and no amount of political grandstanding will justify your creation of a police state in downtown Portland.
During these police attacks in Portland, an 84-year-old woman named Dorley Rainey has become a face of the National Occupy Wall Street movement after she was hit with pepper spray during a Seattle march. A photo of Dorley with the chemical irritant dripping from her chin quickly went viral, becoming one of the most striking images from the protests that have taken place in cities across the globe. Dorley Rainey had been active in Seattle's liberal politics for decades and once ran for mayor. She said Wednesday that she showed up at the downtown protest the previous day to show support.
I spent 5 days in D.C. with the October 2011 group, which was a wonderful thing to go to. And I hope to go to that group again in March. I got pepper sprayed because we were penned in by the bicycle groups until there was no way out. And the minute the people had us penned so tightly that we could barely move, they started letting loose with the pepper spray. And it was not just a few people that were targeted. When you look at the pictures, you will see that the pepper spray fog and the stream of pepper spray is all over. My problem is not only with police brutality, it is with the progressive getting worse attitude of the police. I was tear gassed, and thank you, Norm Stamper, in Seattle when the WTO was there in Seattle. And I also was in a workshop with Arundhati Roy when she was in Seattle for the WTO. These occasions, while they were pretty violent outside, were not nearly as bad as what we see now. It is getting progressively worse. Our freedoms are getting curtailed, and I just listened to the press being banned at Wall Street. This in a country where we export our sort of democracy.
She then commented on Mayor Mike McGinn.
And I told him that he is not in charge of what is going on, that our politicians really have lost control, and this sort of brutality is now endemic all over the United States and is being controlled by Homeland Security, by the FBI, and by the military, and the war on terrorism. And it has nothing to do any longer with what individual mayors may want or not want to do.
Chuck Wexler, director of the Police Executive Research Forum, was also on Democracy Now! After Rainey, who then went on about the nationwide crackdowns and if the FBI and Homeland Security was involved.
They haven't been involved. Maybe they were involved at the local level, but nationally, at least on our conference calls, I don't think they didn't have a role.
There were some press reports that there were Homeland Security presentations urging that these arrests be conducted late at night.
That may have been done at the city level. It wasn't on our conference calls. We had that, no one from, Homeland Security made that kind of presentation, nor, we were just comparing notes. We were like, how are different cities trying to deal with this in the most civil way possible? You know, what are some of the strategies? And some cities, for example, they didn't have the police directly involved. They had, the sanitation people and health and human services and folks like that on the front end. And that was interesting because at the end of the day, why are the police the ones that own this issue? I mean, because the police really don't want to be the ones dismantling these encampments. But, why is it, you should ask cities, why do we put the police in these areas? Because, at the end of the day, people feel as though you need some kind of legal authority or someone who's going to come in. But trust me, the police do not want to be put in this position, and cities really need to ask themselves, is there another way to handle this, this kind of conflict?
At a press conference, FBI Director Robert Mueller was asked about the Occupy movement and if the FBI on a national level was involved. Mueller said he would duck the question and, quote, not get too deep in these water, but added that the protests walk a fine line between protecting First Amendment rights to free speech and the rights of others to use public spaces that the Occupy protesters take over as a part of their tactic. Two civil rights legal groups have filed a comprehensive Freedom of Information request for any and all communications between federal law enforcement agencies and local police that are related to the Occupy protests. It will shed more light on the situation on what other cities are doing in relation to the involvement of federal agencies in planning of a coordinated law enforcement crackdown that has taken place in multiple cities against the Occupy movement in recent days and weeks. But the biggest attack came when Occupy Wall Street in New York was raided in the middle of the night on Wednesday morning. Police in riot gear swooped in destroying the encampment because Mayor Bloomberg felt that health and safety was becoming a concern and that the park would be cleaned and restored.
At Brookfield's request, members of the NYPD and Sanitation Department assisted in removing any remaining tents and sleeping bags. This action was taken at this time of the day to reduce the risk of confrontation in the park and to minimize disruption to the surrounding neighborhood. Protesters were asked to temporarily leave the park while this occurred and were told that they would be free to return to the park once Brookfield finished cleaning. We are now ready to reopen the park, but understand that there is a court order, which we have not yet actually received, enjoining us from enforcing Brookfield's rules, and so the park will remain closed until we can clarify that situation. But I want to stress that our intention was to reopen the park and to let people go in and express their First Amendment rights to protest or their First Amendment rights to just peacefully enjoy the park and say nothing.
Yes, your First Amendment right to say nothing is his favorite right. Bloomberg went on to describe the rules for Zuccotti Park, which were basically the same before, except now they can't stay 24 hours in the 24-hour park.
In the future, protesters and the general public will be welcome there to exercise their First Amendment rights and otherwise enjoy the park, but will not be allowed to use tents, sleeping bags, or tarps, and going forward must follow all park rules. The law that created Zuccotti Park required that it be open for the public to enjoy for passive recreation 24 hours a day. Ever since the occupation began, that law has not been complied with, as the park has been taken over by protesters, making it unavailable to anyone else.
And all of this destruction in the name of safety and helping the public. Restoring in this culture means destroying, because those in power know only how to decimate, not create things, is what they do best. And they did not only destroy an encampment, but a culture. And to understand how the system thinks, Bloomberg, for example, declared following the raid, quote, I could not wait for someone in the park to get killed or to injure another first responder before acting. Others have cautioned against action because enforcing our laws might be used by some protesters as a pretext for violence. But we must never be afraid to insist on compliance with our laws. But it was this raid in itself that was violent. It was the past attacks by police that have been violent, and it will more than likely be the future police actions that will be violent. People seem to think that this is just bad bad policing. That's wrong. It's what policing is. Arresting as many as 200 peaceful protesters inside and outside Zuccotti Park is where we saw this violence. Even New York City Councilmember Dennis Rodriguez was left bleeding from a head wound after he was beaten and arrested as police forced activists away from the park. He explains his ordeal on Democracy Now.
My plan from the beginning was to be there as an observer. As an elected official, I believe that I have the right to observe a situation where I believe that we need to protect the First Amendment of our citizens.
But so you have no doubt that when you were there and the officers who arrested you, that they knew who you were? Did you identify yourself at all as a council member?
I did. A block before I was arrested, there was a large number of demonstrators, and I saw a potential conflict that could happen. And what I did, I moved to the east side of Broadway, where there was not any demonstrations going on, any rally. And when I walked to the next block, two blocks before the park, I believe it was two blocks, I'm not too sure, and it was two or three. That's where I was stopped. I said, I'm Councilman Rodriguez, I would like to keep going, walking to the park. I was pushed back. And I was thrown on the floor. A police officer came from the middle of the street. He jumped on top of me.
He jumped on top of you. Did you say I am a city councilman?
Oh, yeah, I did. Even when I was down on the ground and he was mashing my face against the ground, I say, like, I'm a Councilman Rodriguez. Again, I don't want to use a title. I don't want to be treated as because I'm a council member. I believe that we need to protect the rights that we have as citizens. And it was my concern. However, as elected officials, I know that I have also the right to observe a situation where I would not need it. I was planning. I would never plan to interfere or the work of the police officer. They need to do the work. I have been arrested in the past. I have participated in a number of civil disobedience in the Vieques issue, when the Chambel, in a number of occasions. However, those times I decided to be arrested. I know that I was doing something that could cause my arrest. This particular occasion, it was not only my case, it was a number of people arrested in a way that the NYPD didn't have to do it.
The overnight hours of Monday into Tuesday were chosen because it was believed Zuccotti Park would be at its emptiest. The operation was kept secret from all but a few high-ranking officers, with others initially being told that they were embarking on an exercise when they set out on Monday evening. The operation came after weeks of planning. Police officials watched how the occupations in other cities played out and held conference calls with colleagues in other cities. They increased so-called disorder training, counterterrorism measures that involved moving large numbers of police officers quickly to focus on Lower Manhattan. And in Lower Manhattan, where the movement began, is where the biggest crackdowns took place. In 3 hours, Zuccotti Park had been cleared, but quickly lawyers for Occupy Wall Street got a judge, Manhattan Supreme Court Justice Lucy Billings, to sign an early morning order temporarily barring cops from keeping protesters and tents out of Zuccotti Park. But within hours, she was off the case as court administrators chose a new judge and excluded Billings' name from the list of candidates. So Billings' order was then overruled, and a new ruling sided with Bloomberg and the police, stating that it was okay for people to return to the park, but they could not raise tents or have storage items to make it seem that they were going to have a permanent occupation. These actions led to a massive day of protest on Thursday, November 17th, where Occupy Wall Street came out in thousands and blocked the streets in New York's financial district, bringing taxis and delivery vehicles to a halt. A correspondent for Democracy Now! Described the situation on the ground at the financial district in New York City.
Well, Amy, it's a little bit of a hectic scene here. I can't tell what the numbers are, hundreds, if not thousands of people trying to get to the New York Stock Exchange. They met their first police barricade line at the intersection of Wall Street and Hanover, which is about two blocks east of the Stock Exchange. I noticed one young protester carrying what appeared to be the rules sign for Zuccotti Park, the rules that were posted at the park that barred them from having any sort of occupation, barred them from bringing in camping equipment, barred them from sleeping down. He was carrying that sign over his head. That there's a lot of energy here. People started gathering at around 7 in the morning near Liberty Square. The plan is for sort of a three-pronged blitz on the financial district, marches coming from all different directions, and trying to basically swarm the area with people. Now, the NYPD's response has been equally robust. There are police vehicles, officers, and barricades on every single street. There are four helicopters hovering above the financial district when I arrived this morning. The police are definitely out in full force. City officials say they've made plans to deal with tens of thousands in the streets if necessary. Police wear their riot gear, helmets, and it's a tense situation.
And Ryan, the extraordinary security precautions for people coming into the district, could you talk about that?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. The police have set up these barricades at every major intersection near the financial district, and they're checking work IDs of people that are employed in this area. And I noticed several workers trying to get to their jobs, and they were stopped by the police, turned around, told they had to find a different way to access their place of work. And this is something that actually has been going on for the last 2 months of this occupation. And it's been a major complaint among business owners here, people that work in the financial district. The barricades and the extremely heavy police presence has really slowed down the ability of people to get to work and commerce and those sorts of things. So it definitely frustrates the people that work here in the financial district.
Meanwhile, UC Davis Chancellor Linda Katehi was met with much scorn, and her resignation was called for after police tried to evict those in the encampment on UC Davis, which led to the police pepper spraying the students on the Occupy movement, who were being peaceful and sitting in a line, locking arms, while the police walked in front of them, spraying mace at point-blank range. Later, after giving a press conference, Katehi left to a crowd of silent protesters and showing their disdain for her, letting these actions happen and not resigning. She was on Good Morning America to talk about what happened.
Our university is in such a critical position, and I really want to work with the members of our community, with the students, the staff, and the faculty to take our institution out of this crisis and move forward.
Excuse me, one of the arguments that the Faculty Association Board has made is that given the fact that violence was used against protesters at the UC Berkeley campus last week, you should have foreseen an action like this.
Well, our campus have seen an unrest for the last 2.5 weeks, and that has been building up. I don't want to say, of course, that there were it was a difficult decision for the campus to really try to make sure that the students are safe. Whenever incidents like this happen, the biggest, the most critical issue for us is the safety of the students who are using the campus, the facilities, who really want to learn in this environment. And the situation that was building up was becoming a concern for us, for the members of the community. So the decision was not necessarily to disperse the students, but really to dismantle the equipment for the encampment. And there was an effort for many, many days.
But Chancellor, you say you were concerned. We're looking, excuse me, I'm sorry, but we're looking at the video again right now. They're sitting there peacefully. It doesn't appear to be a violent situation.
Exactly. This video is horrible. What it shows is really very appalling for all of us, and really shows a face for the university that we don't have.
But this is the true face of this country, the illusion that we live in a democracy and not a police state of inverted totalitarianism. It's becoming harder to ignore. Also, the Occupy movement has shown from these crackdowns is that once you try to quash one, another pops up somewhere to hit back. The physical space that was taken over by the police isn't the end. Like the media might portray it, this whole country is ready for occupation and much more. And even beyond the occupation, others are going to do a general strike along the coast of California and shut down or threaten this economy and get those in power who control 40% of the wealth to recognize that Occupy is a force to be reckoned with.
Weak, tell my children I am weak. I did nothing to stop it, I did nothing. When the wind was...
Thanks for tuning in to this week's show of Solidarity Journal. Make sure to listen in every Tuesday at 6 a.m. and 2 p.m. to hear current exposés on the Peoria area or national and international news. Also, if you want to hear my past shows or future ones you miss, check out radioforall.net and look up Solidarity Journal to listen on the archive shows. Make sure to also check out WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate website, WAZU.org. And just simply type in your favorite shows to find out more about what's going on. Otherwise, until next time, keep up the resistance.